Thank you.
Good evening, everyone. Hello. It's Saturday night live with the Hostbusters, and we should have a good show for you tonight. Hopefully we'll get some good call-ins and all those type of things. I just want to say at the beginning, before I forget to mention it, because this is important, at the end of our show, we have Ryan Masano, who's going to be doing his show. And we're going to be highlighting Ryan Masano tonight anyway, because I'm going to be showing a video he did, I guess, recently. So, but remember, Ryan Masano is going to have his own show. I guess he's got a show on Saturday night and Sunday night. So we'll see how it goes, okay? And so that means we could stay on and listen to his show after this show, which is kind of good. But anyway, this is Speak Free Radio. We appreciate the fact that we are here and we could get our information out there. We're going to cover some good points, and Diane is going to go over the book that we've been covering, the 6 Million Fact or Fiction book. It's a book that, you know, you can get from Money Tree Publishing. It's an excellent book. I've talked about it, and Miss Diane is having a problem here today, I can see. Miss Diane, just mute yourself. How's that? Okay. Yeah. All right. So let's get going. Okay. We're going to get into the book right away, so then we can get into other things later, because I got a couple videos here and there. If we get some people that want to call in, that would be great. And so let's go and start with the 6 Million Fact of Fiction. That is one of the books that you really should have in your library if you really want to understand the Holocaust topic. And it's a simple, nice explanation of things. And I get the books behind me. You could see the other books I have that are there. Mm-hmm. Okay, so Miss Diane, why don't you start and tell us where you are in the book, you know, what chapter and all that, whatever, so people can follow along in their minds anyway, if they don't have the book.
Well, it was true in our mind. Okay.
That's right.
Okay, chapter 8, Auschwitz, the second part, starting on page 122. And it's section 65. It goes to page 162. This is really long because most of the Auschwitz is the icon of mass extermination in the Holocaust hoax narrative. They have a word for the whole story. Cremation times make get mass gassings, always mass gassings with air quotes around it, allegations possible, impossible. According to the U.S.-based Cremation Institute, an association of professional crematoria operators and funeral homes, cremating a single body takes approximately 3 to 4 hours using the most modern processes and equipment today, let alone not in the 40s or 30s. And that's the Cremation Institute Guide 2021. Even then, the body's not reduced to ashes like we have been led to believe. In fact, there are no ashes, merely bone fragments left over, which have to be crushed into a gritty powder that is incorrectly referred to as ashes. Altogether, it takes around 5 hours to dispose of one body using the most modern technology available in the 21st century. If you remember nothing else when you're figuring up the nonsense of the numbers, 3 to 4 hours, it takes 5 hours to totally process one body today. According to the official history of Auschwitz published by the Camp Museum, the gas chamber in Crematorium 2 functioned from March 1943 through November 1944. I find that hard to believe, November 1944, because the Soviets were had Hungary in siege, and they were on their way. A period of only 20 months, anyway. The official
They didn't get into the camp until January.
No, understandably, but they were on their way, and there was no way for the Germans to know differently than what they were than what they suspected. They knew that Hungary was under siege, and they were on their way. The official history states that according to calculations by the German authorities, 1,440 corpses could be burned in this crematorium every 24 hours. And this is, as demonstrated above, physically impossible. Again, almost everything is punctuated with physically impossible. Additionally, the official history says that the gas chamber in Crematory 3 functioned from June 43 through November 44, a span of only 18 months. Once again, according to calculations by the German authorities, 1,440 corpses could be burned in the crematorium every 24 hours, they say, but it was impossible. Okay. Of course, none of these theoretical figures could ever be reached. They were like, every time you see these, that was kind of, they wished that were the case. So every time the Holocaust historians are saying a number, you can follow that up with, you wish. Of course, none of these theoretical figures could ever be reached, as it is physically impossible to run a crematory installation continuously without a break over a period of months, without ever allowing it to cool down or undergo maintenance, not to mention that it would have to be rebuilt after 3,000 bodies. Isn't that right, Jim? Was it 3,000?
Yeah, between 2,000 and 3,000.
2,000 and 3,000. And we never heard any time that it was rebuilt because the brick would break down. In fact, even attempting to use such an installation for 24 hours continuously would have resulted in major damage to the entire system, never mind the impossibility of providing enough fuel and personnel to keep up such a schedule. Not to mention that the crematory were coupled. There were usually two of them or two or more together. And if one had to be fixed, they were all shut down. Nonetheless, the amount of time required to dispose of upwards of a million or more corpses, the total number of victims varies according to which account one reads, would amount to at least 3 million hours. Or if the upper estimate of 5 hours per corpse is used, around 5 million hours. Mm-hmm. The time period involved would be enormous. On this basis alone, given the Holocaust storyteller's own account of the crematoric facilities, the claims of mass gassings and cremations can be dismissed as fantasy and physically unachievable. The math, the physics, any of the science that you want to impose doesn't add up. Forensic investigation of gas chamber ruins reveals no evidence of gassings. The crematory at Auschwitz II, Birkenau, were destroyed by the, they said, now this Jim and I contend with this. They were destroyed by the retreating Germans as the Soviet advanced westward following defeat of the Reich's armies. We contest this because the last thing the Germans are going to be concerned about is leftover crematory and prison facilities.
Well, what? Here's the question, Diane. Okay, yeah. Hold on. See, the question is, why would the Germans want to destroy the crematory? There'd be no reason. But here's their answer. Well, they got to hide the evidence.
Okay, well, and your answer to that is?
Well, yet they let Crematory 1 stay. Now, Crematory 1 always stayed. It's the one they show today. So
why didn't they
blow that one up?
Also, if you do not want evidence left behind, you don't leave 7,000 witnesses left behind,
right,
either.
Right. Yeah. They have an answer for everything.
But it's not a good answer, and it doesn't add up.
It doesn't make sense. They had nothing to hide, so why destroy the crematory? There was nothing there to hide, you know?
This situation has allowed the Holocaust storytellers to maintain the claim that the morgues at Crematory 2 and 4 had been used as gas chambers, especially given the fact that no proper access was granted to independent Western observers until after the collapse of communist regimes in 1991. They're saying 1999. We understood that the Western allies were not allowed into Auschwitz until 1955. It's possible that the details may not have been available till after the collapse of the wall. Okay, yeah. That's what Peter's saying.
Yeah.
The Holocaust storytellers refused to even consider such a forensic examination, leaving it to the Holocaust revisionists to initiate this investigation. Thus enters in our friend. The first forensic examination of the alleged gas chambers at Auschwitz II was conducted in 1998 by the American Fred Leuchter, who had previously designed and built many of the execution methods, such as lethal injection, still employed in America. And Leuchter's report, which we still have, and also they go on to talk about further refinement of this report later on, but I'll mention that in a second. They were so disturbed by the Leuchter report that the historical department of the Auschwitz Museum, Franciszek Piper, secretly authorized a new Polish forensic lab report. And apparently they came up with the same results that Fred had. No traces, except in the when they were fumigating, there was no traces of any of the residue cyanide gas in any of the rooms that were alleged to have been the gas chambers. So Criticism of the Lucht report prompted a German chemist, an employee of the Max Planck Institute for Solid State Research in Stuttgart, Germany, Germar Rudolph, to initiate a fresh forensic investigation of the alleged gas chambers at Auschwitz. His conclusions were even more unequivocal than Luchter's. Like I said, he really refined the Luchter report, as it turned out. Under well, the
let me explain something here.
Sure.
Okay.
Sure.
Fred Luchter and Germar Rudolph had, they were on parallel roads, but two different thinkings.
Okay. Two different disciplines, yeah.
Fred was not a chemist.
Chemist, right.
Germar was a chemist.
Yeah.
So Germar came at it from the Zyklon B residue situation, but, you know, this or that. Fred came at it from the logistical, is this a gas chamber? Okay, two different thinkers. Fred was not an expert in the chemical analysis of the camp.
Right.
But Germar was, because that's what he did. So.
But Fred was able to obtain, which you still have his utensils for this.
Yeah, I have, believe it or not, folks, I have Fred's kit. It's a suitcase type
hammer, chisel.
I have a hammer, the chisel, the flashlight. I even have part of the wall.
Yeah, you have some of the rocks. Yeah.
I mean, can you believe that? I think I'm probably the only person in the world that has a picture, not a picture, a piece of the wall that Fred was chipping away.
Yeah, right? He was able to bring back and be tested at a lab to find out the ingredients of it.
He brought back a whole bunch of pounds of the wall, and he sent it out to get examined to see about the residue of cyanide in the wall, which, again, didn't have any residue. So there you go.
Okay. Under the physically impossible conditions of the mass gassing of humans with hydrogen cyanide, traces of cyanide should be detected in the same concentration range in the rooms in question as in the disinfection station structures, and the resulting blue discoloration of the walls should be evident in the walls of the supposed gas chambers. The concentration of cyanide remnants are no higher than in any other randomly selected building. And so it basically proved it was non-existent. On physical chemical grounds, physical essentially being Fred and chemical being Germar, the mass gassing with hydrogen cyanide, Zyklon B, in the supposed gas chambers of Auschwitz, as described by witnesses, did not occur. And the Rudolph report remains the most comprehensive forensic analysis conducted at the Auschwitz site to date. But the author was persecuted and jailed in Germany for daring to publish his scientific findings. And the next category, Auschwitz gas chambers change location. The bunkers in the woods reemerge. This one's funny. However, what really drove them into prominence was the Osteuropa Journal, written by Freitag Meyer. Meyer, the managing editor of the well-known German magazine Der Spiegel, best described as the German equivalent of Time magazine, highly rated establishment, interdisciplinary academic monthly on international affairs. In his article titled Die Zahl der Opfer von Auschwitz, the number of Auschwitz victims, new discoveries from new archival sources, Meyer said that new research made it clear that there had been no gassings at all in the mortuaries of the crematory. Don't you hate it when the people who are supposed to corroborate your lies are coming up with the truth? I know they hate it when that happens. Actually, see, Meyer sounds like he might be Jewish.
Yeah.
He's running a magazine. So, yeah. Anyway, there was Bunker 1 and Bunker 2. I think I've got that here. Bunker 1 and Bunker 2, the Red House and the White House. You know?
Yep, you do.
I do. Yeah, it's not very airtight, and you could live in it, but you're not going to kill anybody in it, that's for sure. It's so leaky. I imagine that was the problem they had in Auschwitz, too.
Yeah.
The real genocide probably took place mainly in the two converted, here we go, farmhouses outside the camp. The foundations, they had no proof of this, White House and Red House. And both of these outbuildings no longer exist. So you can fabricate a whole lot of things when there's nothing there to disprove or prove. For our purposes, however, it's sufficient to note that the complete impossibility of the underground mass gas chambers, and that was another route. They had the two bunkers, and then they went underground. It's so obvious that even establishment figures have been forced to accept that it is absurd. The question then arises, where did the stories about Zyklon B gas chambers, disguises, showers, and so on originate? This is good. The answer is simple. There were mass shower facilities There were a large number of clothing delousing chambers which used Zyklon B, a commercially made pesticide, to combat typhus-borne lice infestations, and there were steam-based delousing facilities in Auschwitz. The existence of these facilities has been distorted and twisted into being part of an extermination of Jews story, rather than just being facilities all designed to preserve prisoners' lives, not to take them. Real showers in Auschwitz and the gas through the showerhead legend. Jim is a kind of a mechanical, electronic kind of, is this possible person? Can you have gas and liquid coming simultaneously or alternatively through a showerhead plumbing system? Is that possible, Jim?
No.
Okay. And they were amazed. Some were actually declaring because they'd heard the rumors about gas coming through the shower heads. They were totally amazed when water did. I know. When I look at a shower, I never know, right? The story of the shower gas chambers, particularly at Auschwitz, originates from the fact that there were indeed mass shower facilities at the camp. The Germans ensured that all camp inmates regularly bathed, and apparently that was anathema for Jews. They hated bathing. To prevent the spread of disease, which could have severely impacted the available labor supply for the industries around the camp. Even when Patton was monitoring various facilities, I guess that was in Germany, had to have been, he was appalled at the filth of the Jews at the time. He couldn't believe it.
Well, he was in a room with the Jews, and it stunk so bad he almost threw up. He had to leave the room.
And he had seen some bad scenes, but that about undid him.
Well, they came from the ghettos.
Yeah.
And the fact that they didn't shower for whatever reason. Mm-hmm. I really can't answer why they didn't shower. Did they have water? I don't know. But the point is they didn't shower. And when they got to Auschwitz, boy, they weren't in the best of shape, and they were completely infested with fleas.
Oh, well, to lice. Just about everything you can imagine, I'm sure.
Yeah,
to answer that question, they had eliminated the possibility of there being any quote-unquote gas chambers in Germany. That had been verified and totally debunked. But they couldn't get into the Polish camps because of being in the Soviet zone for at least 10 years. So whatever was spun in the Soviet zone declared that Poland camps had the gas chambers because they couldn't refute it. Nobody could verify it one way or another, wouldn't you say?
Right. Yeah. They had a good little thing going on there, and you know, they could do whatever they want with the camp to make it any way they wanted and present it any way they wanted. And they did it. They had it all figured out, just what to do with this camp, because they had to go along with the 6 million figure that Jews are being killed. But see, the story already was gone. You see, I mean, it was already going.
It was falling apart. Yeah.
See, once you start with the story, now you have a problem, because now everything's going to fit the story. But the problem is it don't. Okay.
That's right.
So, you know, they had a lot of problems, and that's why they don't want to debate it. You can't talk to a Holocaust survivor about it because they don't know anything anyway. Yeah, it's tough. You have to do your own examination, come to a conclusion, present your information, and go from there. But they have their information that they present, and nobody gets to question it. There you go.
Do the math. That's the thing. We do the math. One thing that we appreciate is Denier Bud on One Third of the Holocaust. He does the math. He lines it up. In fact, if you have 5 million hours, let's say from 1942, if you divide that by 24, where does that put you on the calendar? Does that like yesterday? So they would still be gassing and cremating people in Poland. I wonder if the people in Poland are aware of this.
Yeah.
Okay. So they are also the reason these gas chamber shower stories, why many survivors claim they were taken to the gas chambers, again, because of rumors, and survived because they were in reality taken to the showers for cleaning. And I know that B and S, that's bathing and showering, are atrocities for Jews. And they probably felt like it was killing them. But they came out of there clean. I know it's a real horrible thing to have to face. The other one was a steam issue. Steam and Zyklon B disinfection stations for prisoner clothing as part of the anti-typhus measures. Typhus transmitted lice. Lice pose a continual threat to life in all the camps. The most frequent source of infection originated from clothing. Therefore, all the camps had extensive delousing installation. These delousing facilities had chambers where lice were exterminated either by steam or by an insecticide named Zyklon B, and is produced by this German corporation. And from these delousing stations, the Holocaust storytellers derive the stories of gas chambers, execution by steam, and execution by Zyklon B. The problem is Zyklon B was a sophisticated raid, and somebody already put that up there. It was a disinfect from lice. And some that they had also said that sarin gas was more powerful. Yes, Zyklon B on a list of 1 to 10, if it even ranked, it was of no consequence. Sarin gas was like in the middle of a list of lethal gases. If Germans wanted to do this, they would have picked the most lethal, the most efficient method. This whole operation looks like something the Soviets would have done. And Carlos Porter, wasn't he the one that says the Holocaust is invented in Russia, was created in Russia? Was he the one?
Yeah.
Okay. Delousing chambers used in all camps. They had airtight compartments, and they were small closets, and they had all the facilities that were necessary to delouse the heaters, the fans, to activate Zyklon B. And I think they used the same process in the railroad cars. They would tent the railroad cars, and would they use Zyklon B in those?
Well, they had a big station. They brought the car.
I understand. They would tent them. They didn't put them in the closets, obviously.
No, it wasn't tented, Diane, because a tent would be pretty big. They had a whole big place they brought it into, all built. It was a built building with the train track in the middle of it.
Yep.
And they brought the train right in, and they delouched the whole train.
Yeah.
So that's how they did it.
That would be, to me, if you're looking for efficiency, would be ideal if that's what you want to do. The problem is, what we read last time and discussed last time, is what happens to a person when they're exposed to this kind of a poison, what happens, and then the clean out of something like that. Yeah. So none of that's efficient. All the camps, including Auschwitz, had real gas chambers. We talked about that. Airtight compartments that would delouse and basically detox.
I want to bring out a point here before I forget it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, what was the problem with the lice? I want to explain how this worked, okay?
They caused typhus.
Right, but I want to explain how it causes typhus.
Okay.
So the lice, what happens is they get into a wound, or if they bite you or whatever, they cause like a wound, a little bitty wound. But what they do is they crap. They crap in the wound, and so now they're bringing crap on into your bloodstream, okay? And that's what causes the problem, okay? It's not that the bugs bite you and you have a problem. No, what happens is they crap in, if they bite you or if you have a wound somewhere, they get in that way, and then it gets into your system, and now you get typhus. And then the typhus causes a big problem with you. Biggest thing that typhus caused was diarrhea. And when people had typhus, they just kept crapping.
And dehydration then.
Dehydration. That's why they were skin and bones when you see them, because they
it was out of control. Yeah,
it was out of control.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And apparently very contagious, because apparently lice would go from one person to the next and seek out places to do the crapping and reproducing and all that, and laying their eggs and so on.
Right.
All Nazi documents mentioning gassing equipment discovered in camp records refer specifically to these delousing chambers. Presenting these entirely non-incriminating documents as proof of homicide has been a misleading tactic used by Holocaust storytellers. The closets are now being, and it's so obscure in their description, they can actually, like this, like Peter said in this book, they change locations. And they can say whatever they want because, as we said, the Soviets were in control of that part of all of Poland by that time. And so they could control how the information got out. But this equipment that was being used, airtight doors, the gas masks, and they used gas masks dealing with the clothing, Zyklon B, extractor fans, clothing racks, and other equipment crucial for delousing process. And that was just for the clothes. The steam autoclaves, you probably, as you have said, they claim that they've used steam to exterminate people. Auschwitz had a comprehensive delousing system comprising a sophisticated series of large disinfestation rooms termed autoclaves, which utilized steam to eliminate lice from clothing. The autoclaves were notably efficient, and they became the basis for exaggerated claims in some Holocaust storyteller books of executions in steam chambers that occasionally circulate. That's almost been completely debunked, but every now and then we hear from one of them. And Zyklon B was used to control lice in all camps, not just extermination camps, all camps. It was what they used in Europe. In America, to deal with infestation, what do they use? DDT. That was too toxic. They would not use that in Europe. The Auschwitz clothing disinfestation station, known as the Central Sauna, situated at the heart of the alleged mass extermination center. And they called it the Central Sauna in Birkenau. That was Auschwitz too. The mere presence of the laundry facilities underscores the actual objective of the camp to furnish labor for neighboring industries. They had laundry facilities, and a death camp wouldn't have one, wouldn't have that. And Jim has talked about this. One of the delousing stations in Auschwitz was situated in a section of the camp named Canada. It housed genuine gas chambers that utilized Zyklon B, but for clothing. And this became a horrendous goodwill type of gathering spot that they would sort through clothing and delouse it and then provide clothing for people. Not everybody wore the striped pajamas. As we understand it, just the workers did. Well, now you had to provide clothing for kids, for other, the non-workers, the elderly people, the women and children. The Soviet photographs of the Auschwitz delousing chamber and equipment. Upon completion of the process detailed by the SS, the gas-tight door of the delousing chamber would be secured and the peephole in this door would be sealed. Zyklon B pellets would subsequently be introduced into the chamber using a metal insertion mechanism similar to the ones which can still be seen at Dachau camp delousing chambers. Zyklon B insecticide would exterminate the lice. After the clothing was disinfected, the air within would be vented out via the extractor fan. Sounds like a vacuum. Discernible in the photographs, numerous photographs about this that even the Soviets had taken. And they handle how they handle the Zyklon B and disinfect themselves. And again, the Soviets are providing these. Pictures of these tins of Zyklon B are still used as evidence of mass murder. The fact that they exist, they're claiming that that's enough to prove murder, even though they were found in the delousing facility, specifically in the facility. And finally, that Soviet photographs of Building 164, where the Zyklon B was, I believe that was kept, over time has been disseminated with sensational captions. That's the problem with the pictures, the captions, asserting that Zyklon B was employed to murder Jews in Auschwitz. It's significant that these Soviet photographs are the only remaining evidence of Building 164 delousing station. The bulk hiding was destroyed by order, that's an interesting word, of the communist authorities, and the doors supposedly disappeared, or at least the Auschwitz camp museum claimed so. So they destroyed evidence. You know, in this country, that's supposed to be illegal to destroy evidence of a crime, but that was the activity of the day. Boom.
All right. So anyway, that's that, you know. If Diana just did a search right now and just hit Holocaust gas chambers, you should do that just to see what you're going to get. I'd like to see what the – remember, they're talking about gas chambers. And so now if you did a search, put Holocaust gas chambers and hit pictures and see what's going to come up. Can you do that?
See if she can do that. Yeah. A number of things were built after the war. Even the museum people admitted.
Right. No, this is good. See, because again, they have all the pictures that you want to show, but what they're doing is they're misnaming everything, and you don't know what you're looking at. Okay, so anyway, top left, if you see the picture on the top left, you see the blue staining on the wall there. Well, that's a fumigation chamber, probably, I think, in Medonic or one of the camps. All right. That's a fumigation chamber. Okay. Now, they claim it was a gas chamber. See?
Technically
it's a gas chamber, but it's not a gas chamber for people.
That's okay. Right.
Right. It's a gas chamber where they brought clothes in and they did all this stuff or whatever. And I think in this room here, they might have had like heaters on the wall there because you had to heat the Zyklon B to get the temperature. So again, they ripped off, they took a lot of stuff out of this room that you don't see. All right. But then they just claim it's a gas chamber, but it really is a fumigation chamber. That's why there's blue staining on the walls, because the Zyklon B stains the cement. It stains it. It makes a blue stain on it. It reacts with the metals in the cement or whatever. And there you go. Of course, now they're showing us, you know, just not like, remember, you put gas chamber in there and you're getting all this other stuff. The picture that's on the right there, that's Auschwitz. That's the place where they claimed that was a gas chamber. Now you look at that room. Okay. Does that look like a gas chamber to you? I mean, if you go to another search, I don't know if it's going to come up in this one here, but if you did another search and hit American gas chambers, then you're going to see what a real gas chamber looks like. So now that's all you have to do is compare the American gas chamber with this room that they claim was a gas chamber.
This was a bomb shelter, right? Or that became a bomb shelter?
Well, it was a lot of things. And eventually it was a morgue. They made it into a hospital place where bodies were being taken care of. It was all sorts of things. It ended up being a gas chamber. So this is why I tell people, look at, when they talk about gas chambers, I say, if I ever could have a conversation with a Jew about them talking about being in a gas chamber, that's all I'm going to say is, you see these rooms here? These are gas chambers. This is a real gas chamber. Were you in a room like this? That's all I got to ask.
That's the only way it works. That's right.
Were you in a room like this? And they're going to say, no, well, then you weren't in a gas chamber. This is a gas chamber. Okay. Usually for one or two people. And it was a completely sealed unit. Wasn't that big. Very, very hard, you know, metal, all sealed, the glass, no leaks. That's a gas chamber. Okay. So when you get, that's it. See, people make too big of a thing about this when you're having a discussion with them. Just get into what a real gas chamber is. The United States were the only ones that had gas chambers.
Yeah.
Homicidal gas chambers.
Yeah.
That's it. Okay. If you didn't see this in Germany or Europe, then it was not a gas chamber. That room they're showing right now is not a gas chamber.
No.
I mean, look at it. It's ridiculous to think that you can put someone in that room and kill them. How are you going to kill them? You know, no fans, no nothing.
There's no heaters. And it got cold in Poland, too.
It's just ridiculous. So anyway, all the information's there. If people want to search for it, take the time to search for it. But again, you're doing a search for gas chambers. They're not showing you gas chambers. But people are stupid. They're going to say, I was in a gas chamber. I heard this one person was saying that to somebody. I forgot who was the conversation was with. But anyway, the person was so dogmatic about being in a gas chamber. And it's like, no, you weren't in a gas chamber.
Impossible.
You were probably in a shower.
Yeah. Okay,
you were probably taking a shower. All right. And you, in your mind, you were taught or told that that was a gas chamber. All right. And again, the fumigation rooms that they used to fumigate the clothes were very small. They were probably about 5 by 8 rooms or thereabouts, a size of a good size closet. All right. And that's it. And they had a whole nice unit in there, which again, if you do a search, you're going to have a hard time finding that unit online because they don't want to show it. But they had all the rooms that were fumigation rooms had that unit in it. All right. And it was a one whole unit on the wall. The Zyklon B, it was in a can. It went down.
Mm-hmm.
It went through a chute. It was open first. Then it went down the chute. It poured the tablets onto a little place on the bottom, a tray, okay? And that's where they stayed. And then the hot air was blown through it to get it to circulate, you know, the gas, off gas, so it would circulate. And then you had the heaters on to keep the room nice and warm. And then when it was done, they had fans up there that you open the door. I mean, they used the fans probably first.
Yes.
Evacuate the residue, residual Zyklon B gas. And they did that. And then when they did that, then they opened the doors and they were able to go in and pull the clothes out and use them.
But I understand they wore gloves and masks.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Things to protect themselves.
I would imagine that they had to be very careful, doing all that. But that was it. Those were the gas chambers of clothes. Okay, that's what it was. So anyway, I hope everybody understands that. So we talked about the gas chambers, what they really were. Okay, the rooms they're showing you in Auschwitz, especially in Auschwitz One, is not a gas chamber. It was a crematory. That was the biggest place used for it. It was used as a crematory. It ended up being a place where people went when they were bombing. Okay, so that's what it ended up being, an air raid shelter at the end. Mm-hmm. And then when the Soviets took over the camp, then they just knocked all the walls down. All right, or whoever did it, okay? And, you know, they made it into what they want you to believe as a gas chamber.
They reinvented. You want to address the question or the issue that was just brought up. They talked about electric floors and diesel. If you want to tell the timetable, which was first?
Okay. First of all, you got to go back. Auschwitz was not the first camp. Mm-hmm. We had the Reinhard camps, which was Treblinka, okay? You had Treblinka, Sobibor, Belzec, Kelmo, Medanek.
Yeah.
Okay. These camps were in existence before Auschwitz really came online. All right. So those camps were there, you know, 1940, 41. And in the beginning there, because they claimed there were gas chambers in those camps too. But the problem is there's nothing in those camps to show there were gas chambers. Mm-hmm. In fact, Treblinka was completely, you know, leveled. It was leveled. So there was nothing there to show anything, you know, nefarious was going on with killing people.
But they claim,
you know, that 850,000 people were killed or gassed in Treblinka. And now we get into problems there because remember, the story started first. They claimed they used diesel gas.
Yeah.
You see, now we got a problem here. They use diesel gas, all right? Then when that got exposed as being a bunch of crazy bullshit.
Because you can't kill people with diesel gas. Is that right?
Right. Okay. Yeah. So then they claim, well, okay, it wasn't diesel gas. It was regular gas, you know, from your carbon monoxide. Gas from a car. You know, so then they claim that is what killed them. And then, you know, and then there was all this, they were getting chipped away with all the nonsense because they had to go from one thing to another. Once one got exposed, they had to go to something else. And then even in the beginning, they claimed that they took all the air out of the room. Okay. So they claimed that too. In other words, there was no gas used. They just took all the air out of the room. They vacuumed all the air out of the room. Okay. And then
that didn't sell. I thought that you had said that probably would be the most believable.
Well, that would make more sense because it would be the easiest
thing. All those people.
Do.
Yeah.
The only problem is it would take a long time for that to happen. A long time. Okay. And then they claimed they were, again, one of the first things they claimed in those camps that they were steamed. They were steamed mm-hmm. like lobsters. Mm-hmm. Okay, they were steamed.
That also would take a long time. Yeah,
they get so many things they claim, and this is why when they started the story started off wrong, and they had to keep refining the story. So now, when those camps were done away with, okay, just push them aside. Now we got Auschwitz. Well, because now they had to come up with a better story than that. So what they did with Auschwitz. Now they said, wait a minute, we could say Zyklon B was killing these people because they had plenty of Zyklon B in the camp because they're using the Zyklon B to fumigate everything. So then they turned the whole story into, instead of fumigation, the life-saving thing to keep the people healthy and happy and the clothes clean and all that, they turned it all around to say the Zyklon B was what they used to kill them. You see, they had to get a story, and they had half the story. Went, well, we got the Zyklon B. Well, yeah, but now you're making the story that the Zyklon B was being used to kill the people.
And they had to have a story that would be more easily believable than the other 10 tactics that they were trying to push.
Well, yeah, they had a problem here. So now what they did is they convinced everybody. So now here's where in Auschwitz one. Well, how are we going to say the Zyklon B was used to kill everybody? Well, it's going to be able to get into the room. So how's it going to get into the room? Oh, I know what we can do. We're going to chip holes in the roof. We're going to put holes in the roof and say it was thrown in through the roof. And then it went on the floor and poof. You see what they did? They had to invent and have the story. So now they do have a story, but the story's screwed up because none of that could have happened because first of all, there were no holes in the roof. The holes were put in later. We know that. All right. And if you want to believe that throwing Zyklon B pellets into the room on the ground and the pellets go puff in a room that has no heat in it, has no blowers in it, has nothing in it to be able to make those pellets off gas, there you go. You got a problem. So you could see how one thing they had to keep trying to refine this story, but the story was so stupid at this point, you were done. That was it. The story's done, folks. No more. You can't refine the story. The story anymore because it's so stupid. But they keep pushing it. You know?
Once the Soviets were able to lock down the borders after World War II in the Soviet zone, not allowing anybody in there, they could do whatever they wanted for 10 years. Problem is, the truth is going to find a way. And eventually Fred got in there and Germar got in there and all their nonsense was debunked. Problem is it had 10 years to gather steam. Right. It was also the cause of numerous deaths of innocent German combatants being charged with things that were it was absolutely impossible for it to have happened, but because of the contrivances of the Allies at the Nuremberg trials and the other trials, and we'll definitely get into that some more too, particularly when we go through the myth of German villainy, that the Allies committed even more murders in their so-called justice system.
Yeah, so the whole story is just so cockamamie, but it's the story that's being presented, and we can't present our story. And so people are never going to know the truth. And then if you even have a discussion with anybody about it, they just shut you right down.
Well, they don't know anything about it. You have to tell them what they know because they don't know what they know.
Well, what's going to happen is they're going to say, are you telling me this old woman is lying? Yes.
Yes.
She is lying. Because that did not happen the way she says. She has no clue what a gas chamber is, what it looked like. So they take parts of all the things that were in the camps, and they have a story. You know, I was in the gas chamber that was going backwards. No, lady, you were probably in a shower.
Yeah.
You were probably in a shower room, and you walked out of the shower. That's what happened to you. But you, in your mind, you believe that was the gas chamber, and you're taking a shower now, but you believed it was the gas chamber when you went in. You see, they thought it was a gas chamber.
What really revolutionized the story was when the movie started coming out. Then they had a whole new script.
Right. See, when the movies, and this is the point, a lot of these Holocaust survivors, they get this story from Schindler's List.
Yeah.
That's where they
and
get
the
story.
Holocaust miniseries, yeah. So
when you start talking to them, And they, you say, well, what was the gas chamber like? They're going to tell you what they saw in the movies. Okay. Cause the movies is the way it's being presented now and how they feel it happened. So the movies had to come out at that time, especially this during the Zundel trial time period. Mm-hmm. All these movies started coming out.
Yeah.
Even before that.
Mm-hmm.
But they had to really nail down their lie. And I had a guy in the BitChute channel say, make a comment saying, you know, how could all these people lie? You know, he wasn't talking about the gas chambers. He was talking about something else. He was saying, how could all these people lie about something like that? And I'm saying, are you familiar with the Holocaust? Millions of people are in on this lie. Millions. Because they really believe it happened the way they are. Okay. All right. So we got some guests.
Who's on deck?
Yeah. Let's bring them in. Come on.
Oh,
down.
Henry.
Henry's here. Good. Henry, how you doing?
I'm doing well. Can you hear me?
Very well.
Oh, good. Good. I don't have much to report. Our protest today at the synagogue went fairly smoothly. We won. I think the score was 27-6. That means 27 thumbs up versus six fingers.
Wow, and so
we always win. Today was no exception, except for the fact that today this is from Ann Arbor, Michigan, the home of the original Hash Bash, and today was Hash Bash, and that was an event planned by John Sinclair, who just passed away 4 days ago. And it was he was the one that generated the Hash Bash, because he was in prison at the time, and his supporters actually did the Hash Bash.
What is that? I don't know what that is.
Hash Bash is a time where people in the 70s got together on the University of Michigan campus and said, fuck you to the ruling elites that prohibited marijuana smoke, and they just smoked in mass. Challenging them to, they would have to arrest hundreds and hundreds of people, maybe thousands of people, which was beyond their ability to do it. And so the cops would just cordon off the central part of the campus and let the people alone. And then finally, John Sinclair got released from prison. The laws changed, and now in Michigan, you could buy marijuana just about anywhere. I mean, these dispensaries are all over the place. The marijuana is way cheaper than I remembered it from the 70s. And so it's just a complete industry that's taken off. Down the street from my house is a place called the Wyndham Gardens Hotel. And the high rollers in this business, the growers and the producers, rent out the entire hotel. Margo and I went into the hotel about 5 years ago just to see what was going on around midnight after they stopped charging admission. We walked into a blue cloud of marijuana.
Wow.
I mean, you would get high just by walking around. But anyhow, that was the big deal. You have thousands and thousands of people converging on Ann Arbor, Michigan, the first Saturday in April, which is today. And compare the thousands and thousands to the two guys who are out there, me and Chris, protesting the state of Israel, protesting Jewish power, questioning the Holocaust, and we're the only ones doing it. We had a discussion with our England group Wednesday. And there was a give and take discussion on this peace group called Jewish Voice for Peace. And it's very instructional to me to see how Jews have are playing both sides of the game. I mean, Jews dominate the Jewish state. There's no question about that. But they also dominate opposition to the Jewish state. So we were going back and forth about whether Jewish Voice for Peace, this peace group, is worthwhile or not. And I think it's totally not. But other people were saying, like my friend Peter was saying, well, I get most of my information, all my information about Palestine from these Jewish groups. And it took me a while to figure that part out, because I'm not the swiftest guy in the block. But, that's exactly the problem. The Jewish Voice for Peace crowd is now become the only source of information for Palestine. These are Jews talking about Palestinians.
Right.
It's like, you know, blacks.
Conflict of interest.
White. Yeah, absolutely. And they, so by dominating the discourse and by expanding their influence to, you know, take up the entire slice of the peace pie that they have, now they become the go-to source of information. They're allowed to tell their listeners, like Peter, this man in the group who I respect, I like him a lot, and I'm not castigating him in any way. But he, you know, he believes the stuff they say, and I'm saying, yes, what they're saying is true, but what they're not saying, you need to hear. They're not talking about Jewish power. They're using the Holocaust to to promote Jewish suffering as opposed to attacking the Holocaust to negate Jewish suffering, or at least to expose it for what it is, you know, and that's what you, Jim and Diane, are doing here. And I think that's really commendable. The other thing I wanted just to mention was that I think I got a short video talking about Bishop Richard Williamson from your website this week. I'm a confession. I don't read everything you send, but because God, you know, there's two emails a day I get from you guys. God bless you. But you know, and I had beers with Bishop Williamson in 2010 in London, and he's a hell of a guy, you know. And when he says this is because, and this is Diane, this is where you and I may have a little difficulty here because the religion, you know, he's claiming that Holocaustianity is replacing Christianity.
For the Jews, it is. We don't doubt that. We've seen that happen. Absolutely.
For the whole world, it is.
I can see that. It's
that powerful. It's that.
Yep. I agree. You know,
when Jim's talking about people that he says, "Have you ever been in a gas chamber that looked like this?" and he points to the American gas chambers. But again, like I spoke about my friend Molly last week, you know, she said that she was in a gas chamber. And when I said you were in a post-war reconstruction, she said, "This conversation's over." that's all people can tolerate. And then they want to go hear the playoffs in the NCAA and the football draft and all this mind-numbing society that we live in.
Yeah.
And it's very, you know, so no matter that we say that this theory about gas chambers has been debunked, you know, we think it's debunked. We know it's debunked. We see that's the impossibilities of that. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, you know, the harsh reality is that we're small and, you know, my friends are going to motorcycle up to Canada. I mean, up to Alaska, and I won't be able to join them because I'm afraid of setting foot in Canada.
Yes. You will have been well known, and they've got a couple laws that might not appreciate your contribution.
Yeah. They might just toss me in them.
Who's got
slam and you know, and I would not be a very good inmate in a prison.
No, admittedly, that's one reason. There's a number of reasons why we don't return. We've been asked to return as well. Uh-huh. It's just and all. It's just probably not a good idea. No, I completely agree that Holocaustianity has taken over the brain dead and the mind numbing believers in particularly Christian Zionists. They're more inclined to worship at the shrine of the Holocaust than they are to pray to the Lord. It becomes a pecking order. You know, Jesus Christ doesn't take preeminence over these things. These things are number one.
Yeah. I mean, we just read in our newspaper, our local newspaper is really worthless, but one of the articles was a Christian Zionist guy saying that after the, quote, horrendous attacks by Hamas on October 7th, he now is in Israel, a Christian Zionist, you know, and he's preparing food for the IDF troops. You know, I mean, it's just like, how do we get the biblical Israel separated from the state of Israel?
Because you're right. They're two separate things. Definitely. Yeah. You're absolutely right.
I can respect people that have a belief in Israel of the biblical Israel, But I cannot believe any, and maybe we have an argument here, maybe I can't believe that any kind and just God would condone dropping 12,000 pound bombs on babies.
I mean, we've quoted this before in Revelations 2:9 and 3:9. The Jews who call themselves Jews are not. Jesus is talking. They are not the Jews. They are not the Israelites of the Bible. Although the ones in the Old Testament really screwed the pooch, and they ended up in captivity and under the worshiping other gods, and they were doing it before, and they were doing it up until the time the Messiah came. And so it's just really important to understand. And when the Romans came in, Jim's talked about this numerous times. This is a fact. They destroyed. Jesus said there would not be one stone on top of another. The temple would be totally destroyed. Everything in it. The records, they take all the gold. In fact, the bricks were made of gold. They took those too. The gold out of the bricks. And they took everything. Nobody can know for sure if they are of any of the tribes. Nobody. And so it's of the Lord. But see, that's not what we're supposed to focus on. The genealogy, he said, don't get involved in that. It doesn't make any difference anyway. John the Baptist said, when the Pharisee said to him, we're the seed of Abraham. He said, God could create children of Abraham out of these rocks. Your genealogy means nothing. It's who you believe in now. And that was the important thing. And so that, and it's not important if the Israel of old, and boy, you know, and it doesn't matter who starts that conversation. It's going to get biblical real fast. They screwed up. They weren't worshiping God. They were thrown into captivity. Game over for them. They weren't going to have another chance until the Messiah came.
Wasn't the purpose of Jesus's entry into the world and his teachings is to correct the Old Testament?
Oh, it wasn't. It was to fulfill. Nothing was voided. Nothing was, it looked like it was replaced, but it wasn't. He was the law. He was the ritual. He was the Lamb of God. All that was talked about in the so-called Torah, the five books of the Bible. Jesus fulfilled all of that. It was to be a smooth transition from
how did he fulfill all the murder that is commanded from by the Lord about the people?
I know that with Jim. You want to take that?
So you're asking me why did the Israelite people murder other people?
No,
at the time, right?
I'm saying I'm thinking Jesus is replacing the Old Testament with the New Testament.
No, it isn't.
And I am saying it's a fulfillment.
Yes.
How do you fulfill the murderous rampages?
No,
that are
you're misinterpreting that. It's not the fulfillment of the elimination of the peoples. And it isn't. And if you look at it, and you can't judge what happened then by our standards, because we've had 2,000 years of New Testament teaching. Jesus Christ was presenting to them what the new covenant was. And in his time, Jesus came at just the right time. I thought, you know, of all the places in the world, I would not want to go to Palestine, which is, he was born in Bethlehem. That was in the West Bank. And so he provided what was supposed to be. There were 400 years of silence, if you recall. There was a whole period of time when there was supposed to be the promised land. Jim talks about the restoring of the man to the kingdom of God. This is all part of it. We don't know exactly where it fits in.
Let me try to simplify this. We're getting too off track. Yeah. All right. When Jesus came, he fulfilled the law by the Jews had 620 laws. I think that included the Ten Commandments too, but I'm not sure. Doesn't matter anyway. It's over 600.
Ritual, everything.
Rules, rituals, laws, whatever. Okay. Jesus fulfilled it in the sense that he said he's the fulfillment of the law and two commandments. He summed it up very easily. In other words, you people don't have to go through all this stuff anymore, all these laws and rituals and all these things. Two commandments. He goes, you must love God with your whole heart, soul, and mind, and you must love your neighbor as yourself. If you do those two commandments, then everything in the past is done away with. Everything. You don't have to worry about anything anymore. And that was it. Now, in regards to getting back to your original question, okay, the Israelites at the time, they were being used by God as an executional force upon nations that were demonic, evil, wicked, horrible. Okay, they sacrificed.
Vile, that's right. And they knew it too.
So that's what the situation was back in that those days. God was using the Israelite people at the time, as imperfect as they were, to go into these nations to say to them, well, look, here's the deal. Here's what God wants you to do. And here it is. It's laid out. If you don't do it, we're going to destroy you. And they pretty much said, no way. We're not going to go along with you. We don't care. And God, again, remember, God's trying to warn these people.
Yeah, that
if they don't ship up here, they're going to ship out. Okay. and he used the Israelites as the executional force. But the problem is eventually the Israelites became just as bad as the nations.
Worse.
Okay. They became worse. So yes. God had to use his own thinking again now on them because they became bad.
And the Assyrians, the Babylonians, the Medes, the Persians, the Romans. Yes. Yep.
So he had them, you know, kind of put out of the way. All right. So all that stuff in the past is the past. Yeah. Jesus had nothing to do with any of that stuff.
Well, I don't believe that. It was all part of a plan. But the plan now, it's all been fulfilled. They had their promised land. They lost their promised land. They did what they were supposed to. They didn't do what they were supposed to. Now Jesus is come. The Messiah is come. And he is to show them who the Father really is. They didn't get it. David did. A number of the people, the forefathers did. Abraham did. They understood. Isaiah, the prophets, they understood. But most of the people did not understand who God the Father was. Jesus was going to show them. In a way, Henry, it was a whole new world now. Can you imagine? And the Pharisees are now going to become obsolete. How do you think they're going to take that?
I have one final question. I have Jim. Are you a believer?
Of course, I am. I know. I don't sound like one when I swear, but
oh well. I bet Jesus ran across a lot of that.
Here's what I am. Okay, I consider myself obviously a Christian, but I consider myself an independent Christian from all the other religions in the world. All the religions the mainline religions today that you see are not Christian. They want you to think they're Christian. The Catholic Church, the Protestants, all these people, they have a good story. They're 80% there, maybe. You know, they're talking about God and Jesus and the Bible. Yeah, but they're not the first century Christian that what Jesus taught. Okay, I believe in the words of Christ and what he said. That's what I believe. All right, if Christ didn't say it, then, you know, there's people that came after him that had a lot of things to say too. But I'm primarily with what Christ said and taught, and that's it. That's first century Christianity. Jesus wasn't a Christian. Understand that. He wasn't a Christian. All right? He was an Israelite. He established what would become Christianity. All right? And he was dead and gone.
Was he a Jew?
Yes.
Diane, please.
Because there's teaching. I mean, there's.
No, he wasn't.
That's also off the topic. Well, hold on.
See, what's happened is we've taken that word Jew. That's the word that is used to explain the people who are saying that they are God's chosen people today. All right. Jesus was an Israelite.
He was a Judean.
He could be called a Jew if you want to call him that, but he really, Jew is a bad name. Okay. I hate to say it. It's like calling someone a nigger. Okay. People don't like to hear that term because it's a bad name, right? We don't use that in our conversation with black people. Why would you? And it's like the word Jew. When you say Jew, now you're talking about a group of people that are a mongrel race of people because they're an accumulation of all the races. A Jew cannot prove they're an Israelite today. And there's no Israelites today. You can't, no one can prove.
Nobody can prove it. No.
Nobody. Okay.
If they're from the original tribes. No.
So Jesus, if we call him a Jew, it's like a misnomer. He really wasn't a Jew. He was an Israelite, but people want to call him a Jew. Jews today are a mongrel group of people that basically are mixed in with everybody else. And that's what they are today. Even you, Henry.
But
you
can't. If they're a mongrel group, how do they how do they determine citizenship in the Jewish state?
They can't.
Doesn't it go back?
Not really legitimately.
They can't. They can't. See, Diane explained this a little bit. All right. The Romans came when Jesus died 40 years later, the year 70. The Romans came in because the Jews, again, I'll use the term Jews.
Well, it's used in the New Testament.
Okay. The Jews were giving the Romans a very hard time. Okay. So the Romans came in and Jesus predicted all this too, just to let you know. Okay. He said that this was going to happen to the Jews. All right. The Romans came in and they came against the Jews because the Jews were rebelling against the Romans. They're causing a lot of problems. So the Romans came in the year 70. They completely destroyed the temple. They knocked it all down. Jesus said a stone would not be left upon a stone. They did all that. They completely ransacked it. All the records for people who would claim they were Israelites, again, if you want to use the term Jew, fine, but all the records were destroyed. Okay, so even you, Henry, you can't prove you're a Jew today. Nobody can, because all the records were destroyed. How are you gonna? The only thing you can go by.
Hold it! It's not up to me, Jim. If you went to Israel and said, "I want to be a citizen,"
they don't care.
They would not let you.
They wouldn't let you.
Israel, well, because I want to be a citizen, and they didn't know me. You know, I mean, other than, you know, I can prove my mother was a Jew and I'd be a citizen. You may not agree with that, and I may not agree with that, but the state of Israel.
Again, all the people that claim the Jews today, it's only because of tradition passed down to the families or whatever. That's all they go by. They got
no
proof.
I'm not arguing with that point. I'm just saying that your opinion will not carry much water when you go to the state of Israel and apply for citizenship.
That'll be the day.
I'll do it. Yeah, too.
No doubt. I couldn't in any way.
No.
I'm not, quote, a Jew.
That's right. All right? Nor do you claim it.
You were brought up through your parents, grandparents, you know, go all the way down the line, and they claim that you're coming from a lineage of people that were considered Jews. That's the claim. Okay, that's the claim. But you can't prove it. Nobody can prove it.
No, not really.
But your proof is better than my proof because I have no proof. Okay, you see what I'm saying? I just didn't know
that you were a believer. You believe in that Jesus is your Savior and that your soul is protected and you're going to heaven.
I just say that I believe what Christ taught. I try to live by what Christ taught, and I try to get other people to understand what Christ taught.
And you believe he rose from the dead?
Yep.
Okay.
Well, that's what the story is, right? Yeah. I mean, I can't prove anything. I can't prove any of anything. I can't prove the Bible.
All he's asking is, do you believe it?
You know, well, I can't say,
what do you think Bishop Williamson's response would be hearing you say that Catholics aren't Christians?
Okay.
Well, you didn't say that. I said that.
Oh, hold on. Here's the problem. I love Bishop Williamson. I love E. Michael Jones. I love them. But they feel, particularly E. Michael Jones, I really don't know what Williamson believes, but I believe he would believe.
I think it's the same.
I would say it's the same.
He's
a Catholic priest. Yeah. They believe that the Catholic people, all right, are the Israel of God today.
The chosen.
They believe that the Jewish nation, again, I agree with them on this. The Jewish nation has been pushed aside, done away with, don't exist anymore as a group of people representing God. But they believe that the Catholic people and the Catholic Church has taken the place of the Jewish nation, and they're the Israel of God today. I don't buy it at all. I mean, that's, to me, is heresy. Yeah. That's heresy. So Bishop Williams, nice guy.
Williamson.
Michael Jones, nice guy. But they're heretical against the Bible.
They're Catholic first,
the Catholic
sounds like.
The Catholic Church is heretical against the Bible. They are not practicing true Christianity as set forth in the Bible. they practice a traditional Christianity that got handed down, and there's the problem. There's the problem.
Right.
Okay. Well,
Henry, it's been a pleasure. The direction of the discussion went a little differently than I expected, but
I'm sorry to have
your questions are very welcome.
I'll leave you guys now, and we'll hope to hook up again.
Wait, do I get to speak, Liam?
Okay, so all right, thanks for coming in, Henry. We got other people we're going to talk with.
Thank you. Add a commercial. We need to do a commercial. Thanks, okay, Henry.
Right now. Right. Thank you.
Goodbye, Henry.
Yep, bye now. All right, what is going on with that thing there?
I don't know. Somebody has a comical.
That should.
Sorry, Graham. I meant to come in, but my microphone wasn't working.
All right, hold on.
Okay.
I'm shutting them off because we got to go do it. We're a little late with the commercial.
Yeah.
Again, folks, we just want to let you know that this is Speak Free Radio. All right. And we have a site that you can get books and publications and DVDs that we always encourage people to go to. And I heard that if people want to order something from that site, that if you go and order something and you put hoax in, H-O-A-X, you get 10% off the order. So that's kind of good to see if you want to do that. But anyway, a lot of good books there. The best books you can buy dealing with the topics that we are talking about are on that site. All right, just to let you know, and there's not many there on the site, but these are the best ones to have. If you want any books dealing with that topics, dealing with the Jews, the Holocaust, and all this, these are the books you want to get in your in your repertoire of books. Just to let you know, okay? All right, so I think we are good with that. Diana, thank you for bringing that up. Okay, who else do we have to bring in into the fray here? Okay.
Oi to the bay. How you doing now, Hoaxbusters?
Good, thank you. Appreciate your comments.
Oh, you're quite welcome. You're quite welcome. So I want to talk about the trust. That word trust that I see in your comment section often. Right. And in my comment section, and oh, I don't trust this guy. I don't trust this guy. Well, hey, guys, that's something, that's a liberty that you get in a high trust society in which we don't have anymore.
That's
right. So take that word trust, right? And stick it in your emergency bunker with that food, right? Pull it out when you can afford to trust people again. And these days, you better do research. Right, there's so many people who are just walking around with blinders on. I don't know if I can trust this guy. What are you? Yeah, you're incurious, and you're dopey. You know, it's just amazing to me. It's just amazing to me, people. You know, but I just want to get that out there. You know, this word trust. Stop with that nonsense. Right, you need to do research.
Yep, always. Just like and Jim has quoted this before in Acts 17. Talked about the Apostle Paul said that these are more noble than those in Thessalonica, the Bereans were, because they would receive everything that he said with all readiness and then basically, and this is our vernacular, check it out to see if it was so. And that's what we need to do. If you hear something, check it out to see if it's so.
See, this is the problem I have, again, with the Catholics in the Catholic Church, because the Catholics don't check anything out. I try to tell them, look at it. If you want to be a Catholic, knock yourself out. But if you want to be a Christian, you have to make sure whatever your church teaches lines up with what Christ taught.
Yeah.
If it doesn't line up with what Christ taught, then you can't even come close to saying you're a Christian. And the thing is, the Catholic people, they haven't been educated on the Bible. And so most of them rely on the priest or whatever they hear in church to teach them whatever minimal amount of a Bible message they get, which is nothing. And so this is where we are. So we have the Catholic Church, teaching people all this nonsense about whatever they believe. It's all tradition. It's all stuff that has nothing to do with God, the Bible, whatever. Mm-hmm. But they want you to believe that it does. And then when I even ask E. Michael Jones and have a debate on it, I would like to, talk to you about some of the beliefs of the Catholic Church in harmony with what the Bible says, doesn't want to talk about it.
No.
Right.
You're out of his depth.
Yeah, he can't do it because he can't prove whatever he believes. If he believes in the Pope, if he believes the Pope is the vicar of Christ, the successor of Christ, which he can't prove at all, then there's no discussion. How's he going to have a discussion with me when it's not in scripture?
If you only use the Bible, he can't do it. Nothing, no secondary sources, no history, just the scriptures. Prove your point from the scriptures.
All right. Now, right. I want to get into something because, Vinny, you gave me a site that was an excellent site, a link to a site. Yes. Oh, no. It was, you know, tremendous. When I get these type of information from people, I don't know if Diana has it, the link to it. I said, I like to talk about this link.
Did you send it to her? Would it be one of the emails you sent?
I sent it to you and her.
Okay.
I would like to discuss this tonight. So if you can pull it up, fine. If you don't, then we just move on. But it was a beautiful site that
you sent a lot of stuff.
I didn't send that much. I sent maybe three or four.
Was it about the titles of nobility? Is that what it was?
Hold on here. I gotta think about what it was about here now. I can't, you know, I'm having a blank right now. Diana will find it. There you go. You said that, right? Did you send that?
Let me see. I'm still waiting for it to come up.
I thought you sent this. Maybe someone else sent it.
No, yes. Lawyers in public office.
Okay.
You got it. That's right.
Okay. Rock away, brother. This is incredibly good because Diana and I did a walk and talk a couple days ago, and I talked about lawyers. And I am not one to remember everything. As you can see, my memory is not good on some things, okay? But I did remember that you sent me this link, okay? I just couldn't.
How about that, huh?
Remember. All right. And we had a big talk about this in our walk and talk about the original Constitution did not have a spot for lawyers, okay? In other words, it was against lawyers being involved with the politic of the country. And this article, basically, no lawyers in public office. Beautiful article showing people that they did not want lawyers in office. But all of a sudden, this 13th Amendment is gone. Something happened with it. It got changed. And now we got the lawyers that are running the show in our government.
That's all that's in office are lawyers.
That's right. And if you notice that there's always a lawyer running for some particular public office. Always.
Or judge.
I mean, this was a really good article for people to understand because lawyers screw everything up. Okay, that's the whole purpose, even the whole law profession today. Remember, you can't defend yourself. You can.
Yeah,
you can defend yourself in court yourself. But if you had a friend that was not a, quote, lawyer, they couldn't defend you in court. And that's unconstitutional because you should be able to have anybody sit in with you and be a person that's going to help you out with all this stuff dealing with the Constitution. But see, what they've done is the lawyer business, and that's what it is. What the lawyers have done is they've made a union of people that they're the only ones that can feed you information dealing with constitutional law in the courts. That's what they've done. And they have no right to do this. Think about the be a lawyer today. Where do you get your degree from? Do you get your degree from the Constitution?
No.
Or the government? No. Your degree comes from a school, a lawyer school, wherever. There's all different lawyer schools everywhere across the country, okay? And they get their degree from a school that has been set up by people like them.
Yeah.
That means nothing. Okay? But you have to go into that school. You're going to pay to go into that school. You're going to pay. You're going to take the test. You're going to qualify on their terms. And if you don't, you don't become, quote, a lawyer who can practice law. To me, I say practice unlaw, but practice law in the court system that we have today, whereas you should be able to have access to anything that goes on in that courtroom. You should be able to deal with it. But the lawyers have put themselves between you and the court. Unconstitutional.
They set up a two-tiered system of justice, basically.
That's right.
That's what happens.
Wow. Yeah.
They have extra rights. You see, they're esquires.
That's right.
Esquires is a term of nobility. Right. And the Articles of Confederation originally addressed that, but there was a bait and switch that was done in between the Articles of Confederation and the Constitution.
That's true.
And then the wholesale, complete bait and switch out with this fake 13th Amendment, which makes us slaves as opposed to the original 13th, that's which true. Inures us from slavery.
Wow.
Thank you guys. Wonderful.
Yeah. I mean, that has to be, one of the, you know, biggest thing. Now, Wilgett, I got to say something here. There's somebody that wants to come in. I have a protocol when I do this show. Okay. What I want to discuss is number one. If I get to you, then you will be in the show. But I am not going to bring you in a show to disrupt the protocol that I have.
Or the flow. Show. Yeah.
Okay. You're not going to disrupt my flow. If I'm being very nice to you, even bring you in, because I don't have to bring anybody in the show.
No.
Unless you contribute. You notice Vinny, he contributed. He had something to show. If I'm going to bring you in the show, you better have something to contribute, because I don't give a shit who you are. Mm-hmm. If you're not going to contribute, you're not going to be part of the show.
This was helpful. This went with the flow. You were, that's right. That's Vinny right. mentioned this.
Oh, no, I already set it up by sending you the information, showing what I want to talk about in the show.
That's right.
And I don't want the show to go off in another direction that has nothing to do with what I want the show to go
just
off into.
Just yet.
Okay. All right. And that's why I'm happy. Let me finish up on this.
Yeah.
Okay. And this topic here, this is very critical, folks. We're going to put the link in so you can see the link. Hopefully you can understand it and understand what has happened to our court system today. It's been completely hijacked by these lawyers who now feel they're in charge of the show.
Did this
fellow leave? Is he gone?
Yeah, he's gone.
I was going to bring him in. But see, look at, sorry. You know, if you're not going to play ball with the way we do the show, then you're not coming in. And I really don't give a shit. I really don't care. Okay? Because you're not going to disrupt my thinking and what I'm presenting. See, people, get your own show if you want to have your own show to talk. All right? We have our own show. And I feel bad. I was going to bring you in, but I'm not going to bring you in until I'm done with what I'm talking about.
Right, right.
So I'm sorry if you're upset. That's life. That's the way it goes. Okay. Anybody else would like to come in the show?
Can I? No, I'm kidding. Uncle Murray really appreciated that the contribution, and also the messages on the in the private chat. Those are very helpful as well. You know, by the way, Jim, did you see this, that he didn't consider swearing a problem? It's vitriolic words. I say you do it when you're trying to emphasize a point.
That's right. I don't swear just to swear. I swear to emphasize a point. Okay, let's move on, because we got other things to talk about. All right, Jewish group launches Holocaust Survivor Speakers Bureau. Again, this is so disgusting what's going on here, but they have to do it because they got to keep the nonsense going in the community, in the world.
Yep.
And this article was showing, as you move down on the article here. So 250 Holocaust survivors, they've joined an international initiative to share their stories of loss and survival, blah, 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 blah. In other words, they got to keep the lies going. They're not stories, folks. They're lies. Mm-hmm. They are going to get together. They're going to go over. Where the hell they're going to go? Who the hell knows? Everywhere.
Embellish and cry and all the emotional crap with violin music in the background and Jewish crap. They're going to trot this out, and facts will have no place in their testimonies.
That's
quote,
right.
Quote.
All right. So I just had to bring this up today, because see, the Jews right now, contrary to Mark Weber, all right, Mark Weber, you know, he's the guy that runs the IHR, right? He, you know, doesn't think that the Holocaust is important to bring up today or talk about it.
Yeah.
It's kind of irrelevant. Mm-hmm. But I got a problem here, because these Jews seem to think the Holocaust is important.
Number one.
Right? Number one, yeah. And they're doing whatever they can to keep this Holocaust lie going by getting all their people together, to talk
making laws against what we're doing.
Yeah.
Yeah, the survivors are coming out like pod people. Just when you think there aren't any more, they start springing up out of the ground.
Well, the thing is, now we're really late in the game, so there's probably not as many around today because we're all in the diet. All right, but at one time, there was plenty of them. All right. Yeah. I mean, now they're all dying off. So we do understand that.
They got to bring their kids into it now.
Oh, no, that's going to be the next pool of Holocaust survivors, the children of Holocaust survivors. Yeah. So they can push their bullshit on us forever. It's never going to end with their bullshit about the Holocaust.
They've got to keep the gravy train going.
Yeah, horrible.
And we're threatening that by exposing the lie of it. And more people are believing that it is a lie, and they don't like that.
Yeah, it's got to go, you know, first generation. Right now we're getting in the second generation.
Second generation, yeah. Okay? PTSD because of their parents.
And then what's going to happen, we're going to get the kids. So the third generation is coming up now. They're going out now.
The grandkids of the survivors, quote unquote.
They'll get the pets. You know, this is
the videos of their kin that supposedly survived, and they'll have all sob stories and the music effects and
what they're doing now is they're having these people record their lives now. When they die, they bring it up in hologram.
Yes.
And they talk about their lives during the Holocaust. It's never going to end.
The problem is, in Disney World, they have holograms too, and it's scary, I'm here to say.
Well, I'm just saying. Okay. So that's the deal about the Holocaust. If anybody wanted to come in and have something to say about that, you're welcome to come on in and, you know, make a point or two. All right. Since
that would be interesting.
Since we're done, here's This, you know, Diane and I, when we do our walk and talks every morning, I always give a report about
chemtrails.
Yep. Okay. And so I get a message from my friend Tim, and he's saying that the chemtrails is a hoax. Okay. Well, that's fine. I mean, I'll listen to whatever you have.
That they were here in 1900, which is interesting.
Well, I used to have discussions about with my brother Joe, and he says, you know, there were chemtrails back in the 1900s when planes were starting to fly then. And so now the question is, are chemtrails really chemtrails that are out there poisoning us?
Yeah.
That's the question. And again, I just want the truth. And we see them, you know, at times we see a whole bunch of them in the sky, and we see what they leave behind. So anyway, this bill – it says would ban the release of chemicals into the atmosphere. Is it evidence of chemtrails are real? See,
not necessarily.
Right. And that was the whole point of this. So the question is, which I would like to have an answer for, because I've seen the opposite in people showing chemtrails, showing the planes that are flying, that are doing this, showing that there's vats in these fuselages that have 50 gallons, 100 gallons of chemical in them. Well, that's what they're saying. But is it true? Now, are they doing something to the atmosphere?
That's possible. I think that's possible. Like you were talking about the weather weapons, like the direct energy weapons for weather kind of type things.
Right.
That's possible.
Okay. All right. Let's. We do have someone that wants to take a call or come in on a call. And again, I'm happy to have you in here. But let's try to stick with what we got.
Topic. Right,
there you go. Chris, how you doing?
Okay, is that that's you, Jim? I didn't know if I was on. It's the first time I've called into your program on StreamYard. How are you guys doing this evening?
Good, thank you. How about you?
Oh, I'm doing pretty good. Just did a little walk. I'm in New York City, so
We're
just out walking around looking at the hipsters. You never know when a guy's going to pass you by with a purse and a skirt with a tattooed body. You know, it's pretty crazy. It's almost like a surreal world that you're in here.
A circus.
And you got to see the homeless situation. You cannot pass by. You can't go into a coffee shop or a diner, restaurant, stop at a corner, intersections. They are everywhere now. There's a swarm of them begging for money wherever you go. And there's a lot of violent crimes. I happen to work in housing projects. You're not hearing many of the violent crimes. They're keeping them off the news. Sorry about the noise. I just happened to be on the street.
That's okay.
But let me just get into the conversation. Are you guys talking about chemtrails? Is that the main subject?
Well, that was part of the discussion. Sure.
All right. I would like to discuss that. Now, I have a science background. I 9/11, I reviewed the blueprints for the Twin Towers when I was in college, so I knew this whole story was bullshit as soon as I heard it. But the chemtrails, I got to tell you something. That's a litmus test for people who are plants in the truth community, because there's a lot of people. One of them is Joel Skousen. And I used to have a lot of respect for Joel Skousen. And he started coming on talking about it's contrails. And I'm like, wait a minute, Joel, you're an ex-Air Force pilot. You know the difference between a contrail and a chemtrail, because there's no airplanes. If you go to a local airport, you don't see streams of contrails hanging in the air and then fanning out like a cloud over the sky. So I knew this guy was BS. Plus, he turned out to be a Zionist. I actually sent an email into Rents to alert him of this. This was about a couple of years ago, and then he disappeared. He didn't come on Rents anymore. But, you know, this is amazing. Think about this. I don't think most of the listeners really just try to wrap their mind around this. We have airplanes. I've been in Europe. I've been in Asia, all over the U.S., spraying us for what? What is it, 25 years since the late 80s, I believe? And this is being done. Where are the scientists coming out? Where are people with, pilots, people working at airport, that are seeing these things in the skies? And they know that these planes, by the way, are not flying to and from airports. I challenged Joel Skousen on that. I said, Joel, if these are contrails, why aren't these planes flying in the flight path, which are very carefully designated paths? The FAA would have a fighter jet, or at least be giving you urgent warnings to get back on your flight path. How are they flying haphazardly at an elevation that's not even at the same elevation as commercial aircraft? No answer, by the way.
Well, that was my question. Okay. So my friend Tim, he sends me that. He's telling me that the chemtrail thing is a hoax. But then I'm saying to myself, I don't get this, because these planes are flying a level and they're crisscrossing all over. Yeah. And then you see all the clouds that come in. So you're telling me those clouds aren't coming from those planes, which I think they are. Okay. In other words, I think the trail is going out and then it's dissipating and you're getting a big cloud. But he's trying to tell me, well, it's a hoax. They want you to believe that, so, you know, this way and that way. What do you think about all that?
Hey, Jim, here's what I do with people. I call them on their bullshit. So yeah. If somebody starts rattling away with this nonsense, I say, all right, I'll tell you what. Because I'll first of all give them some science to see if I could reach them. But some of these people, it's like a cult mindset. You cannot – they're cognitive dissonant. They are highly resistant to facts and information that go against their delusionary worldview. So I'll say, look, why don't we park? There's several airports right here in New York City, and I've got a couple of $100 bills in my pocket. You got a $20 bill to put up against it? I'll tell you what, I'll put $300 against your $20 bill. We're going to go by an airport, and if one airplane that takes off produces a chemtrail-looking cloud, and you know, you could point them out in the sky, you could show them pictures of it, you'll get my $300. And if they don't, and there's no trail behind the plane except a little bit of a grayish vapor that quickly dissipates and leaves no trail. It doesn't fan out into a cloud-like formation. They're not in arrays of straight lines and checkerboard patterns. I'll get your $20 bill. And you want to see people backpedal? Try that, by the way, and see. But we're living – I mean, this is scary. We're living in a world where we're not running – we're not talking to people that are running around with grass skirts in Africa with giant plates through their lips. We're talking about educated people all over the world, and there's not many people speaking out. Where are all the college professors? Where are, where are the voices out there that know better? And they're challenging it and saying, look, we want an explanation, because we know this is not coming. These planes are not going to and from airports. The same thing with COVID. You know, when you think about the magnitude of a vaccination where you have – it's not like one or two loose cannon quack scientists, doctors are saying, I don't believe in this. I think there could be dangers to it, like there were in previous vaccines. We're talking about tens of thousands of people dying, some of them dying within minutes, and children dying, having heart attacks and strokes at the ripe old age of 13, 15 – you know, playing a game of high school basketball. I think that happened recently.
Yeah.
Where are people, guys? What's going on in our world?
Right. No, I agree. So what do you think? What do you think the chemtrails are? What do you personally feel?
I think what they're doing is like everything else. It's like if you ask me, why did they kill JFK? If somebody said, well, they killed JFK because he was opposed to the Vietnam War, that would be correct, but it's not really a correct answer because there was a multiplicity of reasons why they killed JFK.
Right.
Most prominently, Israel and the Mossad, because he was going to send the inspectors to Dimona. He had put, Sharon, the prime minister, on notice that we're sending inspectors within 8 weeks. So when you ask me what's the purpose of chemtrails, I'm going to say this. I believe from what I've learned over the years, and I've done quite a bit of reading on it, one is they're trying to artificially create a global warming envelope around the planet. That's one reason to push this global warming hoax. That might have been one component of it. But obviously, it's not really working.
No, it isn't.
Here's the other one that I think is more likely. And I heard a botanist actually speak about the effects of chemtrails on plant life. What it's doing is that it's creating an acid soil over the earth. So think about this. Monsanto produces all the GMO seeds.
Mm-hmm.
They spray chemtrails 24/7 around the entire envelope of the earth where, you know, farming takes place. Now, regular seeds will not work. They're not going to germinate well. They don't grow well in acidic soil. I think that's a major component over the bodies of water. And, of course, the other component, the third one, would be bombarding our bodies with metals. And I can tell you this much. I had exposure to heavy metals that wasn't related to chemtrails. I do welding. So I had, you know, mercury in my body and some lead from the welding fumes. But when I had a hair analysis done, the aluminum was off the chart. It was well above 100%. So they're filling us with the aluminum. And here's what I heard from another doctor on a broadcast that had made a very excellent observation, that when you put chemtrails, did you ever hear this, guys? When you put the chemtrail aluminum together with a body that has fluoride in it from the drinking water, it compounds the effect of fluoride by 20 times.
Hmm.
So again, that's probably the three major components to the chemtrail agenda. And there could be other things. I've heard people saying there's biological agents. I wouldn't put it past them. I personally believe they may have been spreading COVID through the chemtrails. Maybe that's another one. We don't know. Because unless a whistleblower comes out and says what's inside those, you know, those chemtrail tanker planes, we can only speculate. You know, you could try to take an analysis. Some people have, and they brought it to a lab, and the labs have told them the metals that were in the dust from the chemtrails. But we have really crossed the Rubicon into a full-blown Orwellian world. It's actually like beyond Orwellian, because the population. You know, you guys know, if you speak to a friend of yours and you have the conversation that I had, you know, about going to an airport, you see the responses that you're getting, the denial of reality. Mm-hmm. And that's alarming. Maybe that's what the chemtrails have produced. Maybe that's part of it, this dumbing down process, not just through the education system and the media, but possibly the chemtrails. And you might want to look into that, the effect of the aluminum on the other toxic metals, particularly fluoride, in our body and the effects of it. I think basically they have been planning this global new world order. We know people have produced
papers. That's right. Yeah.
Going back to the 80s.
Absolutely.
And by the way, my background is in the occult and secret societies. I go into cults like the Jehovah's Witnesses. I'm probably the top expert on the Jehovah's Witnesses. And I've gone into, for instance, I know this is off topic, but you won't hear this anywhere else, that the Witnesses were started by Charles Taze Russell. And I have the evidence.
Reese, I used to be a witness, so I get it.
No,
I get
kidding.
It. Yeah.
Hey, Jim, so was I for a time.
Okay. Here's the deal. I would like you, because we got another person that wants to talk too. You can stay here if you want. Okay. But I have someone else that wants to talk about something here too. But you and I can have a good chat, because I used to be a full-time pioneer.
No kidding.
25 years.
He swallowed the Kool-Aid.
17 years full-time. Believe me, I was an elder. I was there.
No kidding. Jim, I'll tell you what. I was on a broadcast out of Boston Rick Ferrin runs it, the Six Screens Network. I was doing a broadcast on there exposing the Watchtower for about over 10 years, on and off for about 10 years. If I could stay on hold, I'm going to tell you some things that I guarantee you you never
you
heard
about
the Watchtower.
No, I believe I probably know all of them. But anyway, okay, so we're going to bring Rick in. You can stay here, and let's see what Rick has to say. Rick, you want to come in?
Can you hear me?
Yeah. Very well.
Okay. Well, on the subject of chemtrails go way back. I mean, if you watch the movie Vegas Vacation with Chevy Chase and Quaid, you can see the chemtrails in the sky while they film the movie. And so it's my experience that in Las Vegas, there's one thing about if you walk out of a casino flat broke, the sun is shining, it's a bright day, you're not depressed. But what do chemtrails do? They cloud the sky. I mean, over in the Midwest, you know, you have very few days that you can count as bright, sunshiny days. And the first thing they do is they hit it with a chemtrail. I really do think the chemtrail spraying is psychological. It's to make you look at when you're happy, you don't spend money. You can go to the park and enjoy yourself. You can go to the beach. But if you spray the sky with chemtrails and you cloud the sky every day, everywhere, people tend to do other things. Now, this is only, you know, this is my theory about it, because look, if they're trying to kill us, we'd have been dead many years ago. These things
are. We need the slave labor.
And so I really think it has to do with, you know, putting people into moods where they go spend their money.
All right. So you don't think they're physically putting anything in the sky to hurt us?
Well, look, the people that are spraying the sky has got to come home and eat dinner too.
No, I guess.
I don't know for sure. But all I can tell you is this, that at 5 o'clock in the morning in Las Vegas, you can go out there and you can see six jets staggered. And Vegas used to have 300 sunny days a year, but not no more. You go to Vegas, you've got cloudy skies in the middle of July, and it's unheard of until this crap started maybe like in the early 80s. You can't even go back into the 70s. So whatever they're putting into the sky isn't killing me. It's not killing the people where I'm, you know, look at, I don't know for sure, but I do know one thing is that when you cloud the sky, it takes away the bright sunshiny day and you go off and do something else like spend money. And that's my theory. That's all I can tell you.
Okay. That's fine. All right, Rick, look at that. We got someone else who wanted to come in and we don't have too much more time. So
all right,
we appreciate that. Okay. Deutsch Kaiser.
Yeah. Deutsch Kaiser.
What would you like to say there, Mr. DK? Hello?
I don't know if I really feel like speaking that much, to be honest.
You don't want to talk?
No, sir.
Okay. Well, then you can sit back and listen to the rest of the program. That's fine. Thank you. All right. Anybody else want to come in?
I'll just say that. I'll say as far as chemtrails go, they're not here to kill us. They're here to dull us. Right? It's a dulling agent. They're part of a dulling process.
I can see that.
Right? I would think that people would be outraged at some of the things that they've done to us, you know, in the last couple of years. And yet, there's really been no big reaction. So I think it's more of a dulling process. You know.
Well, I think Reese made some good points about the acidic soil.
Yeah.
Yes.
I mean, you know, again, I don't know. I don't know what's going on here, but there's something going on here. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah.
I mean, this isn't, to me, my personal feeling, this isn't just planes haphazardly going from A to B. No, they're up there doing something, and whatever they're doing, it's not good. And I can't prove anything, but that's just my opinion. All right. So anyway, let's see. Are we going to bring back Reese? Is he going to come back in? Does he want to come back in?
I don't know. He's home.
Reese, you can come back in if you want. You want to come back in?
He's got to get off his...
I have some... Okay. Hang on for a minute.
Yeah.
I have some more commentary if you could take me back on.
Yeah. Come on. We have about 10 minutes thereabouts. So.
All right. Well, let me just say this. The difference between me and a lot of these people in the truth community is that they just go by sound bites. They haven't done the depth of research that
You're
I
right.
have to the beginnings
right.
of the New World Order and its Sabbatean origins. they don't understand, like some of these people that are in denial about, oh, they wouldn't do that, they wouldn't poison us. They have no idea,
right?
That, you know, how mendacious these people are.
Yeah.
That, you know, that's the problem. They're so naive, and these people that are perpetrating it know that they have an extremely gullible public that doesn't want to believe, you know, that daddy could be an axe murderer. So they're just going to block it out of their mind. It doesn't matter if you show him. I mean, have you ever guys ever met somebody whose spouse or boyfriend or girlfriend was screwing around on them? You could bring them a picture of it in some cases, and they're just going to blow up at you. They're going to vent
anger
at you. Or you're just trying to break us up, because that's the cognitive dissonant mind. Once the mind is cognitive dissonant, it's extremely hard to reason with them.
You're absolutely right. It's called reality denial.
Well, Reese, if you were a Jehovah's Witness, you know that 100%.
Jim, they are the most cognitive dissonant people.
I know. I'll give you an example. About it.
I confronted them. I went to the Kingdom Hall and I called them out, particularly on their satanic artwork. I came up with a bombshell on the broadcast, the Six Screens broadcast, December 15th, 2013, Watchtower, of the what makes it really blasphemous. It was a depiction, an artist's depiction of Christ, you know, having the Last Supper with the apostles. And you have to see how many demonic faces and creatures are woven in to the garments of Christ and the apostle John and others. So these people are really unreachable. I had sent out text messages. I work with police sometimes, so I have access to a debate database. I could look people up and find their numbers out and addresses. So I got their cell phone numbers. I'm talking about one of the best speakers of the Watchtower. His name is Drew Wasco. He was a special pioneer. They used to send him out to conventions all over the country. I have other high-ranking members of Bethel. I know somebody in the art department. And not a single one responded. I mean, the Kingdom Hall, they were afraid to come out. The guy that was a pioneer that studied with me, a guy named Michael, a really sweetheart of a guy. Jim, you had never met a witness. I mean, there was one other that was more nicer than Mike. But Mike was a really great person. He beamed with, you know, not like the witnesses say, it looked like zombies. This guy was just filled with energy and warmth. And this guy, when I showed him the picture, he held it in his hand. It was a blow up, an 8x10. And he literally started shaking as he was looking at the picture.
Oh.
But you can't reach him. I knew two governing body members personally.
Yeah. Oh, no, I used to go to Bethel and work. I used to work there. Okay.
Wow.
But believe me, I in the 80s, I was really, I mean, you and I could have some
sold out. Yeah.
Oh, my goodness. All the stuff that we did, you know.
Well, let me just say this, that would really probably enlighten you and might even shock you. There's a direct connection between Charles Taze Russell and the most prominent Zionists of the early 1900s. That's what I brought out on the network, and no other Watchtower researcher knows about it, that the Watchtower wasn't started from Russell's family's clothing business in Pennsylvania. He had a couple of stores. It was secretly funded by guess who? Samuel Untermeyer, the uber Zionist, the guy that blackmailed
Woodrow Wilson. I get it. He was. I understand that Russell was a big Zionist. I get it. I know that. Yeah.
Yeah. Most people don't. It's something that very few authors will cover. There's a Haaretz article that says before Theodore Herzl, there was Charles Taze Russell, and they in that article they say that he was more prominently a Zionist than Theodore Herzl.
Yeah,
this guy was collaborating with what was his name? One of the early masterminds that was plotting the takeover of Palestine. He was writing letters to Rothschild. I have a copy of a letter from Charles Taze Russell to Nathan Rothschild. And so the whole thing, they don't even know what they're involved with. These people, you can't reach them. I mean, they look like total zombies. When I was involved, it was a completely different atmosphere. People were bright. They were friendly. They were engaging. They were like a brotherhood, like a church where people actually interacted and got together. But now it's turned into a complete zombie apocalypse. These people look like somebody sucked the life out of them. I mean, it's just
wow.
bad.
Wow.
Oh, no, I get, I believe you. I've seen it. I know what's going on. And I was very much involved a long time. And, I pretty much walked away, but they disfellowshipped me, you know, because I didn't agree with them. So that's what they do. Mm-hmm. I mean, once you show them to be wrong, they want you out as quick as they can get you out.
Oh, yeah.
And, I mean, didn't take too much time to get you out.
They're going to punish you.
Well, you're a danger. I mean, you're. Yeah. They look at guys like me. And we, you know, we're 11. We're 11
yeah.
in the organization, which again it corrupts. They look at the 11 to corrupt. So that's what yeah. they try to do. You get the bums rushed out the door pretty quick.
Well, especially if you start talking about the topics that really expose, you know, the corrupt nature. Like, for instance, their investments in arms companies, cigarette yeah. companies, and of course, the fact that they're the Pennsylvania corporation, Jim, that owns that Pennsylvania corporation, you could not, even with a FOIA request, there's a guy named Dan Hall that went to Pennsylvania, with a FOIA request, he could not get the list of the names of that charter on that corporation that are on the charter. And I'm going to yeah. tell you why. Those people are mostly Jews and yeah. Freemasons. And they still own the shares of the corporation. So basically, the Watchtower, the rank and file, is nothing more than a slave producing yeah. income that they siphon out each year.
So yeah. No, I get it. Yeah, so you and I, we should get together. Or you know what I'd like to do with you, Reese? Why don't you every week give us a report what's going on, you know, in New York or whatever's happening in your area. Let us know what's going on. I like
come
that.
On, Hoaxbusters, you mean?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
Come on, you know, every time, you know, every week you can come on. We'll give you some time to talk. If you want to follow along with what we're talking about, that's good. You know, mm-hmm. I don't mind people bringing in their own topics. I mean, for you to bring in the Watchtower topic, you know, that's
yeah, that was close to home, huh?
Well, again, yeah. yeah.
I yeah. only did it because Jim mentioned he was a member. I didn't want to bring up a pink elephant's topic that no one would have any interest in. But
oh, no. I've talked mm-hmm. about the witnesses many times on my show, not maybe here as much as during the walk and talk and all that. We're
you guys
really
should do a Zoom together.
Well, we could do that if yeah. you want.
Well, I'll tell you what, I have some interesting, not just on the Watchtower, because I have a lot of other information on Russell. I think it was Lord Hirschfeld. That's the guy. I have his original letters, but I also have very interesting topics related to the early formation of the New World Order, the collaboration of who I refer to as the Unholy Trinity in 1776 with Meyer Rothschild and, you know, Jacob Frank and, okay. of course, Adam Weishaupt. But I'm the only one that covers it. I've been listening to alternative talk, and there's a few people like Mark Dice. He's pretty yeah. well tuned in. But yeah. I go even deeper than that.
Okay, good. All right. Well, we'll use you as a source of information. That's great. And yeah. if you want to get together with me, do you have my information, my email or anything okay. like that?
I don't think I have the. Matter of fact, I only found out. I tried calling in several times in the last month or two. I couldn't find a way to call in, so I'm looking for a call in number. And then tonight, I found the StreamYard link. And yeah. I didn't realize okay. you had to go on StreamYard.
There yeah. you go. Well,
I've got a home phone number here. If I can get it to you. I send it out to everybody. People
yeah. call me. Yeah. It's on all your videos.
It's all on my videos. You okay. really got to get on to my get. Are you on my BitChute channel? Are you on that?
I'm not. I've been looking at it. I've watched your BitChute okay. videos. Sure.
Okay. Well, there you go.
Yeah, that's the end of it.
Everything's there. The phone number's there. Email address is there if you have to get in touch with me. So definitely keep in touch, all right? We got to keep in touch because you have a lot of good information that we could talk about. And we're always bringing up, you know, good information and good stuff to talk about. But this thing about the chemtrails is important because my friend Tim, he was trying to say that it's fake, that it's not what they say it is. Oh. And I'm saying to myself, I think there's more to it than when you think.
Probably always more to it than that.
Jim, I mean, other than just being in denial of reality, on what basis does he say that it's fake? I mean, you could see many pictures, videos of these chemtrails. On what basis
I get it. Well, I'll be talking to him more about this, so don't worry about that. Okay, now we are coming to the end because I heard we have a five-minute ending for the show. I think that's what Diana told me. So, Reese, you can hang in there if you want, but we're going to be wrapping this up because we have a it's a three-minute.
Okay, that's just fine.
That's perfect. That's perfect.
Yeah, it is.
I don't know. It's called Sludge in the Wind. And, folks, we want to thank everybody that called in. And, you know, the fellow there that was on the line waiting to come in and he kind of left because he got mad at me. Sorry about that. At least you know the protocol and what we do. I understand that. So for you people out there, this is going to be kind of like the way we're going to end our show. I might have a few seconds of something at the end that I might be able to talk about. Ryan Massano's show on Free Speak Radio or Speak Free Radio. You know, I really get confused with this name.
Speak Free Radio. Yeah.
Speak Free Radio. He's on next, folks. Ryan Massano. And I wanted to play one of his videos tonight. We ran out of time. So, he's on next and we can watch. In fact, I'm going to see if I can tune into him to see what he's going to be doing. So we're going to play this video. This is going to take us out and end the show. And it's only 3 minutes. So let's see what the video is. I don't even know what it is. I get surprised by these.
Yeah, aren't they great? Oh, chemtrails.
Hey, it's chemtrails. Oh, boat walker. All right.
It blows my mind. Only for a moment, and the moment's gone. All my means pass before their eyes, just a conspiracy. Sludge in the wind. All day long they sludge in the wind. Spray goes on. Just another fogger in an endless scheme. All they spew tumbles to the ground, though they refuse to see. Sludge in the wind. All discharging sludge in the wind. Oh. How long they gone? Puffing gas forever on the earth and sky. It never-ulates, and everybody's gonna breathe it in and die. Sludge in the wind. All day long they're sludge in the wind. Sludge in the wind. Sludge in the wind. Every day they sludge in the wind. Every day they sludge in the wind.
Pretty good chemtrails, yeah.
And I'll say. Boy. Right before your eyes.
Well, I don't know. I think it's more than what they say. I you know, we'll be getting into more.
I wouldn't doubt it.
everybody. I want to thank you for watching.
Oh, come on. It's normal, Goyams.
Yeah, right. Yeah. All right. Thank you, everybody, for coming in, tuning in tonight. And make sure you watch Ryan Masano. He's up next on Facebook Radio. And this is the end of our show, folks. So thank you for watching. And Reese, get in touch with me however you can. All right. Just to let you know. Take care, everybody. Have a good night.
And night.
Talk to you next week. Bye now.
Bye.
Are listening to Speak Free Radio, the free speech internet radio platform.